Hi, Cookie.
Hi, how are you?
You want to say hi to all these lovely people out here?
Good evening. Thank you so much for coming out tonight. I really appreciate it, even though it's a little rainy.
Isn't this a great cover? It's a beautiful cover.
Oh, thank you.
We all love that smile, and your smile is just fantastic. Are you pleased with it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we went through lots of pictures.
I bet you did.
That was a good one that we both approved.
You know, I was thrilled to read the book. It was a great read. I got my highlighter out. I got my pen out. I was really taking notes. You did a fantastic job.
Thank you.
I was so drawn into your book, into your story. We had a chance, Cookie and I, to talk a little bit backstage. And I said, how did you ever get the confidence or the motivation to write your life story? And why don't we share with the audience that answer?
Well, you know, it's really funny because I tried to write this book 3 times and it took 3 years. I would start it, stop. You know, I got nervous. I'm like, okay, we're telling all of our business. You know, it's something I don't have to do, but why am I doing this? And then finally, I just felt like God put it on my heart that, you know, it's something that had to be written. You know, I would start the book. I mean, I would start talking to publishers to, you know, do the book. And then I didn't like that publisher. I put it down and say that it meant that I wasn't supposed to do the book. But it kept coming back. Different people kept coming back until I found the right publisher. And I knew that that's something that, you know, God wanted me to do. And I had to do it because it's a story that needed to be told. You know, it's our testimony. I feel like God has blessed us so greatly and brought us through so much that, you know, when God blesses you like that, he doesn't expect you to keep it to yourself. And for me, it was like I had to share that testimony because I would like to help as many people as possible. You know, if this story helped just one person, then I would have accomplished my job because, you know, I hope that story will inspire and, you know, help someone that's going through any of those same similar stories in there that we've been through and how we made it through. And also, when I used to go out and do personal appearances with my jeans, people would come up to me and say, you and your husband inspire me, you know, it's because of your story. You know, I'm still with my husband, or my husband has HIV or something like that. And, you know, it just kept happening over and over. And that was another reason where I felt like I really needed to tell the full story. And then when we did the documentary on, I think it was ESPN, called The Announcement, a lot of people wrote in and called in because they said that was the first time they had heard my voice. Mm-hmm. They had heard my side of the story. And that's when I knew it was so important to tell the story. And hopefully people will be inspired and blessed by it.
Well, I have been, and I'm honored to be on the stage with you tonight. And one thing, she talked about her voice. And when you read this book, it's Cookie's voice. You hear her. I don't know her as that well, but I thought, oh, I can hear Cookie in this. And that was important to you because I know you had a ghostwriter.
Yes.
But the two of you captured that.
We did. You know, we spoke a lot. And whenever she wrote something, I critiqued it and I would call it back and say, no, I wouldn't say it that like that, you know. So she really, really got to know me and really understood, you know, who I was and my spirit and how important. And that to me was the most important thing because, you know, I think people look at us and think, you know, I don't know what you think, like we're this kind of person or that kind of person, whatever it is. But it was important for me that people really got our true spirit of who we were. And that, you know, that's why I made sure that I had the right person to help me write the story.
You know, when I like the way the story set up, it starts from the very beginning, you know, Michigan State, go green.
Go white.
Oh, yeah, right? I'm like, oh, yeah, I was in school then. I remember that place, like all your little hangouts and everything. But what did you learn about yourself in those college days about committing to a relationship with someone like Irvin?
Well, you know, actually, in those days, it was just about growing up. You know, we met when we were 19, you know, we were freshman year. And as I'm sure most of you know, when you're 19, you know, you're that's not the person you end up being when you're like 50. So you go through a lot of different things. And at that point, you know, it was just a matter of, you know, growing up and figuring out what was important in life. And for me, you know, as much as I loved him, it was more important that I pursued my dream and finished school and pursued my dream and reached my goals. And so, you know, if you know, we were together and that happened, that was good. But if not, then he went his way and I had to go mine.
And there was a lot of that. There was a roller coaster that was going on in your relationship. Yeah. And you'd be together and then you'd break up. At one point in the book, you said, I'm just going to move to Alaska and live with the Eskimos. No one can judge me there, right?
Yeah, because, you know, it's kind of hard when you're having this, you know, like a relationship and it's under a microscope where everybody can see and know what's going on. Like when we broke our first engagement, you know, it was so devastating. And I was so embarrassed. That's when I wanted to move to Alaska. Right. I thought nobody would see me out there with all the cold. I'll hang out with the polar bears.
But you did. You had planned and planned. You bought the invitations and then,
oh, yeah.
Then that heartache.
Oh, yeah. The wedding dress stayed in the closet for almost 2 years and the invitations went to waste. I couldn't even open the box. They just stayed by the door. I finally, my mother just took them and, you know, she had to throw them away. But, you know, you went through all that to get to where you are now. And, you know, if somebody asked me, would you do it again? Then I would say yes. Because we have to learn through our struggles. We learn, you know, and I think, you know, there's always a lesson in something that you're going through. And for us, you know, we went through a lot, but we learned a lot. And for me, it helped me get closer to God. And it helped me put things in perspective of what comes first in my life. And God's first. And then after that, you know, everything else falls into place. And if you let him be in charge, then he will work through everything and everything will work out right. Because, you know, there's one saying that I always say to myself when things are going wrong is, you know, with God, everything is possible. And that's what I learned through all those years.
That's exactly right. Let go and let God.
That's
right.
That's right.
You know, knowing that you had the opportunity to be independent, to have a job and a career. But then Irvin was on the road. He was playing his games. And at one point he said, Cookie, I want you to come on the road with me. But you knew that that would have to be a very tough conversation with your boss. And I think a lot of us get to those points sometimes. Do we want to go this way? Do we need to stay here?
Right.
And you knew when you made that call that you were going to go on the road with him, that the boss was going to say what? You know, you're fired.
You're fired. You're fired.
You're fired. That was a big choice.
It was. But, you know, you had to think about what led up to that. You know, where we had broke up for all those years and we broke up for the second 4 year time period. And we were finally getting back together. And then we finally decided. And during all that time, we lived in separate states. And at that point, we finally said, OK, we're going to make this work. We have to learn how to live in the same city. So I had just moved to California and it was like almost the second year. And his entire career, I had never gone to his championships because this was the championship. It wasn't just going on the road. This was the championship. And I had never been to any of his championships. And this was the first opportunity when he finally said, come and go, because he couldn't do it. That's why it was a tough decision, because I was dedicated to my job. I like I said before, I had my dreams and my goals and my aspirations, and that meant, you know, everything to me. So to realize that if I go on this trip, that if I go, then I knew I was going to get fired, because being in the fashion industry, we have what they call market weeks. And this was a market week where I worked for a buying office. So where all the stores would come in for that particular week, and it would be a very busy week, and you had to work with all the stores. And they only had two people in the office, myself and another extra girl. And so I knew that if I wasn't there, they would fire me because they needed me. And it was a tough, tough tough decision. I cried and I went back and forth. I waited till the last minute. I called him the day I was leaving because I wasn't going to go. And then finally I said, I'm doing it, because at this point in our relationship, this was very important. And as it turned out, it was more important than I thought, because that was the one thing that finally he said, let him know that he could get married.
And when you arrived there, Mrs. Johnson was there, everyone was there, and she said, Cookie, I'm really glad you're here.
Yeah.
That was a big thing.
It was.
It really was. And then we go right to the wedding, and it was so exciting. I was able to cover that. I can still see you guys coming out of the church. Everybody, oh, it was a beautiful day. Everyone was so excited for you. But I from your book, I remember you saying you held your breath to make sure that he was, after two broken engagements, you held your breath.
Two broken engagements and a postponement, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, two broken engagements and a postponement in 12 years. So when finally he said, okay, let's do it. It was really funny because when he called me up, it was right after that championship, and he called me up and he said, I can do it. And I go, no, you can't. And he said, no, really, I can do it. I'm like, no, well, then let's just go to Vegas. And he said, no, you deserve a wedding. I'm like, no, I can't plan another wedding. Let's just go to Vegas.
She said, let's get married now.
He's like, no, I promise you, I'm going to call my sisters. We can do it. And Pearl and Kim are here, and they did it in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, he put that thing together in 2 weeks. And still, all the way up until I was in the church, and I kept pacing. He said, you better be on time. I was dressed and ready 2 hours ahead. I had on the gown, the veil, everything. I'm like, where is he? Where is he? And I remember calling Mom, and she said, he's at home. I'm coming. He's coming. And then she walked in, and he wasn't with her. So I was like, oh, my God. He's not coming. She's like, no, baby, he's coming. Don't worry. Then finally he showed up.
And how did that feel? How did that feel?
God.
That moment you'd waited decades for.
Whoosh.
Yeah.
Finally.
So that's the high, right? That's the high point. After all this time, that's the high point. And then 2 months later, it's like the bottom fell out.
Yeah.
Tell us about that day.
That was the biggest devastation.
Yeah.
Because, you know, not only was it, you know, you before it was just a matter of, are you going to get together? Are you going to stay together?
Right.
But this was life or death.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that day I was home. He was on the road. He was going to, I think he was in Utah. I was about to play a game. And I had a friend that was a wife of another player. And sometimes we would go over each other's houses and watch the game together. And she had just come over. And we sat down and we were about to watch the game. And the phone rang. And I picked it up and it was him. And he said, I'm on my way home and I have to tell you something. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, it must be something. Because if he's not on that court, I know something seriously is wrong. And then so eventually he got home. He walked in the door and he just, you know, looked me right in the eyes. He said, I don't know how else to tell you this, but I just was diagnosed with HIV. And that's the virus. That was when I first heard what HIV was, because I never heard of it before. AIDS I did, but I didn't hear about that before. And he said, that's the virus that, you know, causes AIDS. And that was just devastating. You know, your whole heart just, you know, fell on the floor. It's just like, what do you do? Oh, my God. Because this was 1991. And back in 1991, when anybody said AIDS, you thought it was a death sentence. And, you know, because you didn't hear about people living, you know, you only heard people died from this disease. And when he said that, it just scared me to death, you know. And then after we talked a little bit, and you know, he asked me, you know, he said, I understand if you want to leave. And I said, no, you know, I love you. And you know, and for me, I felt like I had two decisions that day. I could leave and let him die, or I could stay and help him live. And I loved him, so I decided that I was going to stay and help him live. And you know, we fell on our knees at that moment and we prayed, and I knew at that time we were going to have God to help us through this thing, you know. And that's what we did. And from that day forward, we looked forward. We didn't look backwards. So I didn't look back to how did we get here, or what did he do to, you know, what caused this thing to happen. It was, okay, that's done. What are we going to do? We got to go forward now, you know, focus on how can we help him live. So let's educate ourselves about the disease. Let's find out about the medications, you know, do everything we can do. And at that point too, I learned from the doctors that, you know, having a positive attitude was more as just as important as getting on the medication and, you know, physically, you know, getting physical and physically being better. And so we had to, you know, focus and be positive. And that's what we did. Every day was a good day, you know. And even though it was overwhelming, the way I did it was you just had to say, okay, one day at a time. We made it through this day. Let's make it through the next day. You know, and again, educate yourself, you know, and figure out how we make it through the next day. And for me, you know, it was also about holding on to God. And, you know, I wake up every morning and that fear would jump into my head. And it would say, he's going to die, you know, and I learned because over the years with all the things that happened, I learned to get closer and closer to the word. And what that teaches you is that God has some wonderful promises in the Bible, and those promises are the things that keep you going. And so what I started doing was I started taking those promises and replacing that fear, he's going to die, with, you know, no weapons formed against me shall prosper. Every day I would say that, or I'd say, you know, by my stripes, you are healed. Or I'd find, and when I got tired of that one, I'd look for another one, because the Bible is full of them, you know. So there's so many, you know, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And that's how I got made it through. One day at a time, the next thing you know, it was a month, it was a year, and then it was 25 years.
All right.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Your faith life has just grown. It just over the decades, yeah, just grown and grown. You have gone to the word. It's such a testament to who you are and what you've endured.
Yes, it is. I couldn't do anything without it. You know?
Because I remember reading that Magic was always on the road. He was always gone. Now he's home, you know, and now you're trying to lift him up every day, trying to just talk about things that are in your life just to keep him going.
Yeah.
And then he eventually was able to go back and play. And I know that meant so much to him and you.
Yeah, it meant a lot to him because that was his whole world, you know. And it's one thing when you know, play and you get older and, you know, your retirement is coming and you prepare for it, but it was snatched away from him. And because of that, I think he really mourned it. And so he did everything he could. And, you know, and luckily, you know, thank God for David Stern, who was the NBA commissioner at the time. He actually educated himself about the disease. And that's when he decided that he could let him play. Go back and play. And the first thing he did was let him play in the All-Star game, you know, and then after that, the Olympics. And then after that, you know, to come back to the NBA. But when he came back to the NBA, you know, then more people, there was more chatter, you know, and it was a little more difficult. So he decided to ultimately go ahead and retire. But at that point, I think it was actually a good trial for him, because then he realized that the NBA had changed. You know, the players had changed, that their dedication to the game had changed. And so I think he was actually ready to retire at that point. But in the beginning, it was hard, you know, because he was so used to going. So I had to get him off that couch. You know, he was sitting laying on the couch feeling sorry for himself, which is something he never does. Anybody that knows Urban he's a very positive person, and he's always, you know, finding, you know, ways to do new things, new opportunities, create new opportunities. But this time he was a little down, and I told him one day, I said, you're going to have to get up off of this couch. You're going to have to go do something. You can't sit around here and bother me. So you need to get out and find something to do. And he did. You know, he started his T-shirt company, and then he put together a little basketball team that he traveled in Europe, you know, doing those kind of things. And it gave him a little taste of basketball, but also kept him in shape, you know. So, you know, it worked out.
at the time, you're pregnant, you're going to have a baby. And yeah. And when you heard that, I'm sure here your husband is has this diagnosis, but you do think about yourself, your unborn child. So that's a whole nother aspect of right. of learning about this. How did you deal with that?
Yeah, same way. That was very hard, you know, especially worrying about your baby, you know. And back then, you know, now they have a thing called rapid testing. And so you can get tested and you can find out within minutes, really. Back then, it took 2 weeks, almost 2 weeks to find out, you know, what your diagnosis was. And that was really hard, really, really hard. Again, that was another one of those, take a deep breath every day, make it through today, make it through the next day. Because not only was I worried about myself, I was more worried about my baby. You know, I had just found out we were pregnant, you know, the whole thing. But as it turned out, God was with us and I didn't have it. And because I didn't have it, the baby automatically didn't get it.
And praise God, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Praise God. Praise God. And EJ, what a special young man he is.
Yes.
And you noticed some really different tendencies when he was a little boy.
Yes.
And you have a great relationship with him. And why don't we share a little bit about what that journey has been like with you and EJ and how you protected him and then how you helped him be him.
Yeah, when EJ was about 3 years old, I noticed that he liked playing with dresses. And when he started preschool and he would go to school, he would they had dress up corner, you know, and they would have like the fireman suits or the policemen and or you know, the superheroes. And they would have the little Cinderella costumes. And he always wanted to go to the Cinderella costumes. And one day the teacher pulled me aside and said, did you know that he likes to wear those Cinderella costumes? And I thought, oh, my God. You know, I kind of noticed at home, but I really thought that once he got to school, it would change. You know, so you kept saying, okay, he'll grow out of it. It's just one of those things. You know, he'll grow out of it. He's a little baby. You know, he'll grow out of it. But he never grew out of it. It's like from one thing to the next thing. And, you know, I tried everything. And I wrote this chapter in the book because I want other parents to read this and understand that sometimes, you know, the children are born that way. And, you know, there's nothing we can do about it, really. And we have to just embrace them and love them. And, you know, don't do what I did. I tried everything. I tried to get him to change. I tried him not to be who he was. I didn't want him to be that person. I wanted him to be who we wanted him to be. So I kept saying, no, you can't play with dolls. No, you can't dress like that. Boys do this, girls do that, you know, and the whole time. And he, you know, as he got a little older, he tried to hide it, but it really wasn't who he was. And so it was always in him somewhere. Even when he played like the video games, you know, I'm like, okay, he's in the video games. That's more boy. That'll work. He always picked the girl. He always wanted to be the girl in the video game. So, you know, I'm like, at one point I had to just finally say, this is who he is. And I have to love him and, you know, let him be who he is and support him just like I would any other child, you know, that was mine. You know, why would I love him when he's born, but when he tells me he's gay, I don't love him anymore? How can you do that? It's the same person, the same, you know, human being that you know, born into this world. How can you then turn to them and say, I don't love you anymore. Get out of my face. Get out of my house. You know, you just can't do that, you know. And then if you love them and support them, they grow up to be, you know, good human beings and productive and go out into the world and do, you know, important things. If you don't, they do one or two things. You know, they become insecure. They get depressed. Some of them kill themselves. Some of them pretend that they're not who they are. They get married. They have families. And then one day they get divorced because they can't do that anymore. They can't live that lie anymore. So, you know, I think everybody has, you know, you have to make their own choices. And I'm not trying to tell you how to run your life, but I'm just saying I told this story because I wanted you to see, you know, if I had just let him be who he was from the time he was born, you know, I think, you know, I don't think he would have been different, but I think he would have been, you know, more self. You want your children to be secure and you want them to be positive people and, you know, like I said, make a good impact on the world. You don't want them to end up being, you know, insecure, not happy with themselves, and, you know, like I said, eventually, hopefully not, but do something bad to themselves.
It's beautiful. I was appreciative of you sharing that chapter in the book. It was very well done. Yes.
Thank you.
Brave, very brave. I know that you and Irvin in the book said you wanted to have more children, and you were blessed with a beautiful Elisa, adopted beautiful young lady, who at one point wanted to find out who her birth mom was.
Yes.
So that's another very revealing chapter in the book about that journey that you had with her. And share with the audience a little bit about that.
Yeah. That one was a little difficult too, but with Elisa, we adopted her because at the time they told us that we couldn't, you know, they weren't sure we could have another child. Now with the HIV, there's lots of different ways you can do it. There's, if women have it, they can take a pill and still, you know, get pregnant and the baby would be fine. If the male has it, you know, they can wash the sperm and then you can still, you know, get pregnant. But back then they didn't know. So they told us it was best to adopt. So we adopted. And Elisa, she's a beautiful little girl. She's a young girl and, you know, with a beautiful spirit. And, you know, but she's just full of fire. This one is full of fire and full of energy. And I love it, you know, because, you know, she's going to be somebody. She's going to be somebody great one day. I know it because she's just determined. But she also was very determined to know who she was, you know, where she came from. She wanted to know her history. And, you know, I remember when she was a little girl and some of her friends at school, their parents were getting pregnant and having second and third children. And, you know, they were talking about what they were like in their mommy's tummy. So she came to me and she asked me, "Mommy, what was I like when I was in your tummy?" And I had to tell her, "You weren't in my tummy." But, and so from day one, I wanted to be honest with her and tell her that she was adopted because I didn't want her to learn from somebody else. And I just think it's the best for them to, you know, understand who they are, that they know everything. And so I told her that, no, you were not in my tummy, but guess what? We chose you. You know, we went out and we saw that this beautiful little baby and we chose you. I said, when I had EJ, I didn't get to choose EJ. EJ just came. That was him. But for you, we got to choose you. So you are very special. You know, and then for that, and that helped for a while. That satisfied her. But she was she's a very curious little girl. And as she got a little older, when she was like in her teens, she really started asking more about, what does my birth parent look like? What, you know, who are they? Where do they come from? At that time, I gave her a picture. And I thought that would satisfy her, and I thought it would stop. Nope. I had one picture that the people that we adopted from gave us the picture of the mother and father. And I gave it to her, and she actually busted out crying when she got it, but then got over it and was happy to be able to see, you know, who she looked like, you know, and that made, you know, that made a big difference in her life. And, you know, when you raise children, you want them to be whole people. And for her, some of the pieces of her puzzle was missing. And so I you know, when she kept asking me after 13, after about 16, she wanted to meet her mom. I said, okay, we're going to find her. And it just so happened that the birth mom was looking for us too at the same time. So it was kind of easy to do. It was scary for me. It was very scary to do it because I felt like, oh my God, what if she meets her and likes her better than me? And then she wants to be with her, you know? And so I thought maybe I shouldn't do this, but you know, you have to be unselfish. You can't be selfish because again, you want your children to be whole people. You have to complete their puzzles for them. Because when they go out in that world by themselves, it's a crazy world out there. It's going to be hard enough as it is. So you want to, you know, equip them with what they need so that they can be good, secure people when they go out into the world. And so that's why I chose to do it. And as it turned out, it turned out to be a good thing because she was a lovely woman. And now they have a good, all of us have a good relationship with her.
That's beautiful. And I know that you were willing to do that, you know, to be unselfish, give her that opportunity. And at one point, I know the birth mom asked Elisa, you know, would you call me mommy? And she said, no, I have a mommy.
Yeah.
Isn't that beautiful?
Was the best thing.
Oh, my gosh. I just was like,
that I could have ever heard when she went there.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I just thought as a mom for your daughter to say that, because you empowered her to have
that
experience.
Meant the world to me.
But it was risk. It was a risk.
Yes.
And then it came back to you.
Yes.
So it's just another blessing. Mm-hmm. And so when you have this book and your children can read this, this is your legacy to them. And when you wrote it, was that your intention, or now they have this journey?
Yeah, no, that was not my intention.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really, it's like a roadmap for them, I guess. And I didn't think of it that way. I just thought of it as, like I said, as a testimony. It's my testimony. And, you know, we went through a lot of things, and I, you know, the chapter on relationships, and the chapter on dealing with a critical illness, the chapter on, you know, my son, and the chapter on my daughter. So I knew I had a lot to say. And again, the whole point was to hopefully inspire others and help them, you know, along their journey if they had, you know, similar situations.
So 25 years married, your anniversary, you got your clothing line. Now you've got your author, your book.
Yeah.
Wow. That's very impressive. And what's next?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'll see what God has for me and where God leads me. Next, we'll see. Right now, I think right now I've decided that I'm going to be a momager. And I know some people are like, what's that? Well, that's when I got that from the Kardashian mom. She's the manager of her children. So I'm going to start managing my children, because they want to get into the entertainment field. And I want to make sure that they're not mistreated. So I'm doing a little bit of that on the side, you know. They have people, but just making sure that, you know, they're taken care of out there. And that's actually, believe it or not, keeping me pretty busy. And trying to keep up with my husband, that's a big job. Because now he's taking on another job. I said he's like the Jamaicans. He has about 99 jobs. But they're all good.
That's all good. Right. Well, you know, we all see that glamorous life, you know, what it's like. And what is it like to be a basketball wife in the NBA and the whole stardom part?
Well, you know, it's so funny. We always, we never like sort of got into all of that. And mostly because if you read the book, you know, I became a basketball wife toward the very end of his career, although I was around when he did that. But, it's kind of different for us, but we also are the type of people, we stay close to home. You know, we're really close to our family. That's more important to us than anything else. You know, we never turn Hollywood. You know, we have a very close circle of friends that stay around us, and they've been around us forever. Like, how many years, Pam? a lot of years. When you do that, you don't get caught up in all the other things, you know, and that's what we did. We made sure that we stayed close to our family, we stayed close to good friends. And we, like for me, I put together a village of good friends. And so, you know, they help you with your, raise your children, you know, things like that. So my kids have a group of kids that they grew up with, and that they are still to this day very, very close with. And that's the most important thing. You know, it's not about, you know, being in the Hollywood, being in the, you know, front of the camera. You know, we really gave them a good foundation. And that's just who we are.
Yeah, well, you do such great work, don't they, in this community right here in Flint, in the Detroit area, Thanksgiving time, Christmas. It's amazing.
Thank you.
So we appreciate that so much. And this has been just wonderful conversation. We hope that you've enjoyed it tonight.
And I just have to say thank you, Lansing, for always supporting us. And through, you know, through our trial with the whole HIV and everything, but whenever we came home, everybody was so friendly and greeted us with warm, open arms, and still does. And we just thank you from the bottom of our heart. Thank you so much for supporting us.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the book is Believing in Magic, My Story of Love, Overcoming Adversity, and Keeping the Faith. And I know you really, really well now after reading this book. And I am grateful for that.
I hope you still like me.
I do. I love you, sister. I love you. I am in awe of you, actually. I really am. And you are surrounded by people that love you and bless you and this wonderful family and this community. And you are welcome anytime, any day.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Cookie Johnson.